Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meet the Rockadopolis. I'm Yislike Rockadopolis.
And I'm Lance Rockadopolis.
And today's episode is part two of our discussion of our vanilla worldview. So we'll start out with praxeology. Praxeology assumes that human behavior is purposeful as opposed to instinctive, for example, or reflective. And the question at issue is, how should we act to achieve our purpose? So a vanilla example might be something like signing up on a dating site in order to meet prospective partners.
On the kink side of things, thinking meditation, thinking about servitude, learning about what slavery means to me, the habits and activities that I can use to reach my goals of being completely owned by Yislike.
I guess meditation could be considered an action of sorts.
I think we had this discussion earlier.
Argument.
It wasn't an argument. It was a spirited discussion about what each of us considers actions.
It's like nothing is an argument to you. Is an argument even a thing? Is an argument ontologically a true thing for you?
It is.
We just never have them. Is that what's going on?
No, it's like porn. I'll know it when I see it.
Okay. Next up, epistemology, which is the theory of knowledge, especially with regard to its methods, validity, and scope. Epistemology is the investigation of what distinguishes justified belief from opinion. So knowledge would be justified belief. It would be a belief that you hold that you can back up with reasoning and evidence. Does that make sense? I think that's what they're. And the question at issue is, how do we know what is true? I tend to approach the quest for truth through a variety of means. For example, the interplay of reasoning and evidence. But I think open-mindedness is really important as a disposition, curiosity, imagination, creative speculation. I think skepticism is really important. Discerning what isn't true may be as important as figuring out what is true. We gain a lot from figuring things out for ourselves instead of just choosing to adopt another person's values or assumptions about life.
Can you give an example? And what is your process for accepting or adopting another person's values?
Well, that's a good question. And we're going to talk about values in a minute. What I'm really talking about is discernment, seeing the differences between things. Discernment does imply value judgments, but is that bad?
In my opinion, value judgments lead to limited thought processes and narrow-mindedness. That's not to say that I don't have my own opinions on things, including how I go about the world, but I would never want to dictate how others should live their lives. If I disagree with something, I might say to myself, nope, I'm not for that.
But you're still making value judgments for yourself.
About the idea, maybe, but not about that person.
You make value judgments about cars. I mean, you have like True. Massive amounts of value judgments.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. But what you're talking about is people's life choices, mm-hmm. right? Like you're not, like neither of us is in the position to really judge people for their lifestyles.
Right. I certainly listen and observe people. I take in what they have to say. But if I do like the message and accept it, I'm saying that it really resonates with me. And if my life experience confirms what they're saying is true, then that's my process on accepting that.
So how is knowing what is true different in the kink world than in the vanilla world? Over the years, I've found there to be maybe an overabundance of credulity in the kink world. Just for Lance's
I would like to know, what does credulity mean?
Credulity means to believe things, to not necessarily need reasoning and evidence to back something up. And in the past, I've actually been pretty deliberately credulous. Like in my 20s and 30s, I would prefer to believe what someone said than to not believe it. And then I went into the kink world and that reversed itself. Very little of the knowledge that I see deployed in the kink world has passed through any kind of rigorous testing, empirically or through the use of reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we talked a lot about the lack of academic research and rigor about kink, kinksters, and our practices in general.
Yeah, actually the term social epistemology comes to mind. It's the idea that knowledge is created socially, often between people just chatting with each other. FetLife discourse is probably the best and most powerful example of social epistemology that I've ever encountered. Twitter is a kind of a discursive Wild West. There's a ton of weird shit going on everywhere all the time. And the warden of that mental hospital sees
that is Twitter.
Yes, sees his job as keeping Twitter as chaotic as possible. And you know who I'm talking about there. He's like the Donald Trump of social media. Mm-hmm. He just loves chaos. Whereas FetLife is more like a prison that's 100% controlled by warring gangs. And John Baku is basically the warden trapped in his office pandering to the gang leaders. This is, it is though. Like he's always going on FetLife and asking people what he should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very domly.
But it is catering and serving his customers.
Some of them, just the most vociferous ones, in my opinion. Next up, eschatology. Eschatology is the part of theology concerned with death, judgment, and the final destiny of the soul and of mankind overall. And the question of issue here is, what is death? So one definition of death comes from the National Institutes of Health in the United States. It's, quote, irreversible cessation of all biological functions that sustain an orgasm. That's that sustain an organ.
You have something on your mind, that even in death.
That sustains an organism. I hope there's life after death, especially if I get to have a good afterlife. But from all of the different ideas I've heard throughout my life about the afterlife, I'm not confident that any of them are accurate. I actually do pray daily, but I really can't say that I know anything about God. I just hope that if God does exist and did create the universe, God would not make people willing and able to do evil things and then punish us for doing those evil things. That's not a loving God. That's where I draw the line. Why would God make us flawed and then punish us for being flawed? Not my God. That's an evil God. I choose to believe in a God whose love and mercy are 100% unconditional. And anyway, like my grandmother used to say, we're punished by our sins, not for them.
Hmm. That's an interesting quote.
Like it's all happening right here on earth.
If I consider myself an agnostic, in the more soft sense of that term, the term agnostic means a person who believes that nothing is known or can be known of the existence or nature of God or of anything beyond material phenomena. I'm not sure I completely buy into that. I'm just saying that I would not be able to claim that I know or have complete faith or disbelief in God. So I don't want to take a position on that issue, basically.
Hedging your bets.
Yeah. I have seen some fairly rigorous philosophical explanations or proofs about the existence of God that gave me comfort, so that in and of itself speaks something about me that I want to believe.
So do you believe in an afterlife then?
I kind of believe in it, but again, unsure. I do want to believe in rebirth, but I think that rebirth, the whole purpose of that is a forgetting, and that there's no carryover of knowledge from previous lives. I think that's the whole point of birth or rebirths. I do like to think that there is a purpose in life that is higher than just this limited mortal realm. So I'm not even sure how productive it is to have discussion about it or contemplate what happens after death or before birth.
In previous episodes, we've talked about kink as one form of the life instinct and as a way to turn the death instinct into the life instinct. I'm actually somewhat partial to Freud's take on it, insofar as I understand it, and my understanding of Freud is pretty limited, actually. But as far as I can tell, he started out thinking that the death instinct and the life instinct were the same thing, like it was just a matter of life recycling itself. But he ended up deciding that the death instinct was actually distinct from the life instinct, and that the death instinct was fundamentally about an urge to reduce living things to their basic inorganic components. And I see that as being really tied to like American materialism, that we're much more focused on inorganic things, on acquiring non-living things. We talked about Bettelheim, remember? And that was more or less his view of the death instinct. And that may be kind of analogous to religion. In Christianity, Christ turns death into eternal life. In some forms of Buddhism, the goal is to actually stop coming back to life. It kind of reminds me of vampires. I love vampires. And I do see them as basically like mythological uber kinksters. That's all thanks to Anne Rice. She completely kinked up the vampire lore. I will always be grateful to her for that. But in other vampire stories, there's the true death. Vampires are supposed to be the living dead, but they're only really dead when their bodies are incinerated or there's a stake in the heart that turns them into dust. So what is the value? What is the power of like consciously developing a worldview for yourself? So early in our relationship, Lance said that he wanted to adopt my religion and all of my beliefs. And that didn't really happen. And I think it was because you would have had to have driven up to go to church with me on Sunday.
Got Lutheran churches down here.
We do. It's true, but it's not like mine. But anyway, 6 years later, I asked him if he still wanted to embrace my worldviews and even my religious beliefs. And he said that he still did. But I'm skeptical that he really wants to do that. Like, would you really be able to see the Eucharist in the Lutheran way instead of the Catholic way?
Probably not. It would take a lot of unprogramming. I don't know the difference.
Right. You don't know the difference, but it's just the idea that it is different.
That interests me, certainly.
And really?
I'm open to learning about it.
Cool.
But you're asking if I'm going to be accepting of that, and I'm not sure.
It's interesting because these days people will become evangelical Lutherans from Catholicism and a lot from Methodism. The Methodists want more Catholic-like ritual and liturgy, and the Catholics want less. And so they tend to converge onto Lutheranism.
Wow. Yeah, interesting.
Onto the more liberal type of Lutheranism. But truly harmonizing our worldviews would be effortful and might be more trouble than it's worth. And it would probably be double, triple the trouble with more slave husbands, even if it's possible, let alone desirable. On the other hand, in music, harmony requires more than one part. It requires accompanying chords that enrich the texture of the piece of music. So you have the melody, right, which is usually sung by the tenor or the soprano in like a four-part choir, for example. But then all of the other parts are bringing in accompanying chords that enrich the texture of the piece of music. So we might actually be better off having at least slightly different worldviews.
Yeah. So you see yourself as the tenor or soprano and having the subs harmonize with your main theme.
Bringing in more richness to it,
right,
from their own individual understanding of the world.
Interesting. So it seems to me that given all the positives associated with having a worldview, you know, allowing one to think more deeply about things, also allowing one to make decisions, we should give a warning about clinging to a worldview. Conflicts tend to occur when one person confuses their representation of the world with reality, hanging on to it like a dogma. There was a Polish-American scientist and philosopher, Alfred Korzybski. He remarked that the map is not the territory. Now, that phrase is widely used by practitioners and students of neuro-linguistic programming. It says that it can be easy to confuse conceptual models of reality with reality itself. Our worldviews are necessary abstractions and useful, but limited, and it needs interpretation. And sometimes those interpretations can cause problems if your conception of another person's worldview is incorrect, or even your own worldview is incorrect.
I think maybe the ultimate value of consciously developing a clear and explicit worldview is to be able to understand and express who we are and what we want out of life. And I suspect that a lot of submissive men are looking for guidance. They're looking for DOMs who have strong and clear ideas about how to live one's life and about how their subs and slaves should live their lives. So the DOM's task is to provide that guidance, at least partly by providing an actionable worldview. So this concludes our discussion of worldviews. In our next episode, we'll be discussing the book More Than Two, which is about non-monogamy. So until then, have a great week. Thank you.